So I'll ask then the next group to come forward. So we have Fanny on the panel. Charlotte will be speaking as well, right? And Madeline, and I want to pronounce your last name correctly.
D'Agincourt.
Right? Okay.
Better.
And so like I said this morning, I'm your moderator, but they did a good job of moderating themselves this morning, so we'll see how this goes. So I'll leave the mic here to Madeline to start us off and pass it along, and then we'll have questions, and if you want to comment on each other's discussions, feel free to do so.
Yes.
Nisakut, for those that don't know me, I'm Madeline D'Agincourt, or D'Agincourt, as you said so nicely. I'm the chairperson and president of Inuit Broadcasting Corporation. Sorry I wasn't here. I missed this morning's panel. I had a pressing commitment that came up I had to deal with. It was kind of cool though when I was driving over here. My sister's an Inuk rock star. Her song was on the radio. It was playing on the radio when I was driving here. I thought that was kind of fortuitous. I just want to make a couple of comments, and I'm hoping I'm not being repetitive from some of the panel members this morning who are great. I was happy to see Claude Grenier, who I've known for many years, who's with Tahkumit Nipinak Inc., as you met this morning, and Julie as well. Just a couple of comments. I'll start off just a few notes here, and then just a couple of five comments that I'd like to make for the record. Inuit Broadcasting has been around for 30 years plus, providing television programming to APTN is our who we're licensed to, and we provide television programming in our language, Inuit language, and we're really proud of that. And speaking of Inuit language, primarily one of the fundamental mandates that we all look forward to as Canadians, not just as Aboriginal people, is in UNDRIP, United Nations Declaration of Indigenous Peoples, recognizes the right to communications in Aboriginal languages. All Canadian government policies should reflect and support that right. And we're huge proponents of that as an organization. The Northern Broadcasting Policy from 1983, we feel, should be reviewed and updated. It's really outdated. I'm sure you heard that this morning. Many issues remain. All institutions, government bodies should include Aboriginal representation, and that includes the CRTC, who I've met with several times. And see one brown face there. Telefilm, CMF, Canada Council, NFB, and CBC. Consultation would be on a regular basis, and it should be on a regular basis. Consultation should take place also in the north, and unfortunately that has not been happening as much as we would like to see. Also TV, one thing I don't know if it was mentioned this morning that we're really happy about is TV Nunavut. IBC first put forward a concept of creating a regional television network for Nunavut, and during the process leading up to the government of Nunavut's Inuit Language Protection Act. Along with Nunavut independent producers, we had formed an organization working towards the creation of such a network to promote our languages. And we anticipate that within 2 years we'll launch this service, the TV Nunavut. And TV Nunavut programming will primarily be in Inuit language, supporting one of the goals of the Inuit Language Protection Act. And having our language available in the home, at work, and at school is really important to us. Just a couple of comments. I had a video I would have loved to have shown, but I didn't save it to a drive, and it would have taken forever to upload here. So unfortunately, I won't be showing that video, but I can provide it to you on a...
I'll put it on the website.
Yeah, we'll do that. That sounds great. Our viewpoint is, as an organization, the state of Inuit broadcasting and the production sector. I just have five quick comments here that I'll end with. Production, number one, is production funding through the Northern Aboriginal Broadcasting Program, NAB. It's severely under-resourced. I'm sure you heard that this morning, and everybody in this room, I think, recognizes that. Funding levels have remained constant since the 1990s, and at which time they were seriously decreased. Additionally, NAB-funded groups are no longer eligible for funds such as Telefilm, Canada Media Fund, because we're not-for-profit. which is a huge barrier. And despite the fact, for example, it was IBC that lobbied in the mid-90s to change the guidelines to allow for Aboriginal language production to qualify, and we don't qualify for those. It's a bit of ironic. Number two is training funds have been difficult to access. Training is a huge issue for us with emerging new technology always coming out. Small portion of NAB is allocated towards training, and professional development is totally not eligible under NAB, and that's an issue for us. NAB has not allowed for much in the way of technology upgrades, for example, transition to digital, which has been very, very costly for us as an organization. We've really had to scramble to keep up with technology, and meeting the cost of keeping up with technology has been very expensive. And and number four is access to distribution has decreased. There's a lot of limitations with APTN. Alternative distribution such as ISUMA, it's unfortunate that Zach couldn't be here, Zach Kunuk. Alternative distributions, i.e. through ISUMA, has limitations as well due to bandwidth issues. Like if we wanted to share a program with ISUMA, just uploading, it would just be impossible. And you can't rely on airlines in the winter when there's storms and whatnot. So there's a lot of issues with sharing technology in the north, sharing programming. Mainstream broadcasters are not carrying much Aboriginal or language programming. Probably, and they probably won't unless they're outright obligated to by a condition of license. Number five, the last point, language requirements for English versions of programming is also an issue. And it leads to resources to producing a language are reduced by cost to produce English versions. And that's something that IBC has really struggled with, especially in the last 10 years. And subtitled versions tend to encourage reading of subtitles rather than listening to the language. So that's the last point I'd like to make, and thank you.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Fanny, coordonnatrice radio de CFRT 107.3 FM, la radio francophone de d'Iqaluit. I'll just switch to English because, I'll switch it to English. So my name is Fanny, I'm the radio coordinator at CFRT 107.3 FM, the only community radio station in Iqaluit, I believe. And of course, there's many community radios in the hamlet, but I feel a little bit disappointed that they couldn't be here. Of course, it's not affordable to buy tickets and facilities for them, but I really wanted, at the beginning, before being part of the panel, I really wanted to record something with them, but because of linguistic barriers, I couldn't just get in touch with them, and also with communication issues, so it's such unfortunate. I'd like to talk about CFRT, because maybe you know, but we've been running for 23 years, and the radio has been on and off and enough since the last 15 years, and I believe maybe in the late 90s we almost lost our license upon CRTC because of several issues at the radio. So I came into function at the end of December, and it has been almost 4 months that I'm in Iqaluit, and I really enjoy that. And I would like to explain a little bit the peculiar modulus operandi of CFRT. So I guess you know that most of community radios in the hamlets, they are rebroadcasted by CBC. So most of them, they share the transmission with CBC. Our radio station is managed and operated by the Association of Francophones of Nunavut. So it has its own peculiar modulus operandi, because we're this kind of type A or type category one, where we run with volunteers, and without volunteers, we can't produce anything, any content, any programming. So it's based on volunteers, and I find it very hard to recruit volunteers, because Iqaluit's such a such a city with a lot of movements. People are in and out, and sometimes you just get a volunteer and he's very willing to work on something, then 3 weeks after he has to leave, and I have to restart my work, it's very hard for me. And also, I'd like to bring up some other issues, of course. Most of panelists mentioned issues of fundings, of course. We're a victim also of that kind of issue. We have a lot of issues for fundings because they cut a lot of fundings, not only from federal funds, but also local funds here for GN or other fundings. We thrive to get more funding so we can bring up more projects. So I was I have to introduce also my coworker Catherine. She works with me as a coordinator of the radio station as a in the Department of Development and Programming, and I'm more like the producer, so I just focus on production and volunteering recruitment. So one of the things that I want to bring is that I have so many projects that I want to bring that I want to bring up to, like the 50th anniversary of Inuit surname. So before 1967, I guess that you guys all know, but before 1967, Inuit, they have this number bill, so they were named by numbers. And after 1967, thanks to a lot of local politician, and also thanks to Abe Okpik, they regained their surname. And Cultural Heritage didn't bring any project for that. So I wanted to bring something, you know, via the radio station. I wanted to bring a project, wanted to bring a podcast, something like a Vox Pop. But I need funding. If I don't have funding, so I have to abort that project, which is so unfortunate because I think it's part of Nunavut history. I have a lot of projects that I want to bring out also with Arctic College. I've been working with the College Foundation, with Jennifer Charles and some of her students to come to the studio to do some tryout, let's say. They're very shy, but by taking the mic and by discussing their passions on the mic, they build more confidence, and I feel so good. I feel so grateful, you know, when I can see young students taking the mic and being more confident and just share their passions. So that's something that I want to go forward with Arctic College, hopefully. And also other issues about training. So to give you a little bit of my background, I have an academic background in philosophy and political science, so it has nothing to do with radio, and I have a lot of lack of skills and knowledge on radio. So when I came here in December, I didn't even know how to turn on the console and the production monitor. So that was such a failure. So I really need not only fundings, but I need also a lot of training. And I have to bring something. I've been doing a lot of research, reading some thesis published by Louis McCumber, which is a very famous professor that taught that was teaching before Arctic College and left Nunavut. Now he's at the University of Laval. So he published a lot of research on the potential of community radios in Nunavut, which is very interesting. And he said, I don't remember, maybe the second chapter of the thesis, he mentioned that the NTI in 2014, the NTI cut a lot of fundings for community radios. I don't know. I can't pronounce it. The Nunavut Tungnavik Inc. Nunavut Tungnavik Inc. So they cut a lot of fundings for community radios. Also, I have to mention also the MTO, which is the Municipal Training Organization. They brought a program every year, just once a year, to give some training to community radios. So most of people from the hamlets, they can come to have some training. It's like maybe a half day or almost a full day training. And in my opinion, I think it's insufficient. If you want to give a training to run a radio station, just a day in the year, it's insufficient, totally. And And I'm wondering if they still do that training. Okay, so she just confirmed that they don't do that training anymore. So that's such unfortunate. So these are the main issues that I want to bring up, because fundings and training for me, it's, you know, two issues were very, really strictly related to each other. Like, without funding, there's no training. If there's no training, we can't run the radio station and we can't generate profits or projects or any substantial activities. Now I have to talk a little bit about the policy now from CRTC. So when I came into function and I started to work on January, I did a lot of research, reading all these, you know, tons of papers from CRTC, which is just like a pain in the ass. Sorry, but sometimes they don't make things easy, you know, to understand. And so I just took the phone and I called them directly. And I said, I need some information. So we're a Francophone radio station. We have to produce mainly in French. But I'm wondering if we can do some ads in Inuktitut, because we have a lot of people, either for GN or for other corporations, that they're willing to do some ads in Inuktitut. And the program officer who was on the phone with me, she said, well, your license doesn't permit you to produce any ad in Inuktitut or in English. It's only in French. But in Nunavut, we're like maybe 800 Francophones, so it's getting harder for me, you know, to get some ads in French, because we can't just focus on this kind of niche. I have to go forward to Inuktitut in English to get, you know, more ads. So this is one of the issues that I don't understand why we can't get a grant or an exemption, because we're, you know, pretty remote, and because we're Francophone radio, which is like a very small community, Francophone diaspora in Nunavut. So that's something that struggles me. And also the promise of performance. So some people mentioned before, the promise of performance is very hard, because we're very remote, and because people are in and out, so it's making my work very difficult to, you know, to make the promise doable, because we have to produce 15% of oral content, so we have to get 15% of oral programming, which is very hard, because first, lack of training. So instead of taking me 30 minutes to produce a show, it takes me 3 hours to do the editing, the collage, and etc. So that's an issue. So it's very hard for me to get the promise of performance through. And the other thing is equipment. So I'm a little bit shy just to mention that, but real with 29 watts. So the radio doesn't go to Apex. It's only in Khalwit. So that's something that we should work on too, because I'd like, you know, to expand the transmission of, you know, the air onto Apex, and maybe hopefully one day, like, you know, more than Apex. So that's something that I would have to work in, having some heavy equipments like transmission UPS or upgrading the watts. It's very expensive. So this is one of the issues that I want to mention. Well, that's it.
Any questions for her? For Fanny? We do them at the end? Is that okay?
Okay, sure. I'm Charlotte DeWolf, and I'm with TV Nunavut. TV Nunavut, the idea of TV Nunavut was first brought up in about 2004, 2005 at a winter institute, which was organized by, it was a partnership of AGEET, the industry association at that time, of Drum Song Communications, which was a production company in existence at the time in Nunavut, IBC, they were a partner in the Winter Institute. And we had a workshop, and one afternoon at the workshop, there was some discussion going on. Zach Kunick was there, and, you know, IBC was present. They were part of the sponsors of this Cooperative Winter Institute. And there was Nunavut Film was present, as well as officials from Culture and Heritage and the Department of Economic Development and Transportation. And there was some exchange going on. And just from that meeting that afternoon, it was decided that we would work together towards forming a TV Nunavut, one that would broadcast mainly in the Inuit languages in Nunavut. And from that time, a group of people, dedicated volunteers, have pushed forward with the idea of a TV Nunavut. In 2012, this working group organized and registered as a not-for-profit society, becoming the TV Nunavut Educational Broadcast Society, and started in earnest to fulfill the requirements for a broadcast license. In 2012 as well, there was also a summit, and participants attended from across the territory. I believe there were over 100 people at this summit. And at that summit, the vision and the mandate for TV Nunavut was first presented or developed. From that point on, then TV Nunavut began to undertake the activities required to fulfill the requirements for a license with the CRTC. So there have been audience studies and business plans. We've been funded by the Inuit Orcs across the territory, so we have the support of the Inuit Orcs in the Kikatani and Kivalik and Kitimat regions, funded by Culture and Heritage and by ED&T as well. In 2016, there was an audience survey that was completed, and also in August of 2016, we met with representatives of the CRTC here in Iqaluit. And at the time, they suggested to us that there may be a faster way to obtain what we needed to go ahead and broadcast. And up to this point now, we have an MOU with the Legislative Assembly, which will allow TV Nunavut to broadcast using their channel when the Assembly or committee meetings are not in effect or not being broadcast. We've negotiated with Telsat. Everything is in place for TV Nunavut to begin operating as the educational broadcaster of the territory, except the designation from the GN as the territory's regional educational broadcaster. The Department of Economic Development and Transportation was directed recently by Cabinet to work with TV Nunavut to see that TV Nunavut becomes a reality. We met 2 weeks ago, myself, Ukulika Jiziak, who's on the board of TV Nunavut, and Debbie Breesbaugh met with the CRTC, and we met with Canadian Media Fund representatives. At this time, it's being recommended by the CRTC that TV Nunavut operate under an exemption order. And we met with the Canadian Media Fund to ensure that once TV Nunavut is up and operational and operating under this exemption order, that we will be able, that our licenses that we grant to content producers in Nunavut will be able to trigger funds from the Canadian Media Fund. And this is really important because TV Nunavut will be asking the government of Nunavut to provide core funding to the broadcaster. But we also want to ensure that TV Nunavut contributes to the economy of Nunavut. And by having the licenses issued by TV Nunavut, having those eligible to trigger funds from outside the territory, the Canadian Media Fund, and possibly other distributors, then we are bringing dollars into the territory and helping our content providers to become financially viable, actually. So the CMF at this meeting questioned some of the information that was given to TV Nunavut by the CRTC. And some of that has to do with what TV Nunavut licenses, what programs of the CMF they are able to trigger dollars for. The CMF has assured us that they will be flexible, but we will be working on that in the future. So we would say that within the next 2 years that TV Nunavut will be operational. It will be broadcasting primarily in the Inuit languages with some material produced in French and in English, but mainly in the Inuit languages. Inuit culture and heritage are unique in Canada, and the preservation and promotion of that culture are one of the key goals of the territorial government and Inuit organizations that represent the Inuit of Nunavut. Throughout history, there have been many factors that have negatively impacted the preservation of the Inuit language and culture, but one of the greatest threats over the past several decades comes from the influence of television, and more recently, the internet. The influences of Western culture through TV, cinema advertising, radio, etc., are substituting for and competing with local and minority cultures. Television viewing, even for very small children, is considered an active, interpretive process of meaning-making. And within our media-rich society, it is a critical vehicle to empower citizens and support literacy development. Currently, there is little programming available on Nunavut televisions to balance the daily influence of Western culture. Even that programming, mostly through APTN, has been steadily decreasing. TV Nunavut is an incorporated entity that was formed to improve this situation. Through the creation of TV Nunavut, a primarily Inuktitut language educational broadcast service providing television programming to residents of Nunavut. An audience survey was commissioned in March 2016 by TV Nunavut to examine the level of support throughout Nunavut to establish an educational television broadcasting channel. To deliver made for Nunavut or versioned programming to strengthen the Inuit languages, Inuit culture, and regional identity. Respondents to the survey strongly supported the development of content that is currently not available through the over 500 English and French channels in Nunavut. While radio fills a gap in Inuktitut language content and provides a source of information, TV Nunavut would be able to provide rich information to reach all ages and learning needs. We see television in Nunavut as a vital tool to help strengthen language use in the home and community, which is at the root of language and cultural revitalization. The creation of TV Nunavut not only supports the goals of the government of Nunavut and the needs and desires of Inuit across the territory, but it will also provide a substantial boost to the growing media arts industry in Nunavut. The establishment of TV Nunavut and the subsequent agreements with the Canadian Media Fund and others will allow Nunavut producers to leverage additional funding from other resources for made in Nunavut productions that will be broadcast on TV Nunavut. This additional funding would not be available without a territorial broadcaster. If we believe that children can learn negative lessons from television, then it stands to reason that they can learn positive lessons too. The same medium that leads children to learn product information from a commercial should also be able to help them learn science concepts from an educational program. One respondent during the audience survey that was conducted in 2006 just stated, "We need to get this TV Nunavut going for Nunavut now." TV Nunavut's mission is to be an independent Inuit television broadcasting service that informs, educates, entertains, and engages residents of Nunavut. TV Nunavut will promote, preserve, and enhance Inuktitut while reflecting Inuit identity and culture. In February, we had a speaker here at the theater during Black History Month, Dr. Ahmed. He's a forensic psychiatrist. And during his presentation, I noticed a slide that he had put up, and he was talking about Aboriginal communities and mental health. And of course, we know that suicide is a problem and considered almost epidemic in the Aboriginal communities across the country. And there are many reasons for this. But one slide in particular that I noted that he put up talked about a study completed by Chandler and Lalonde in 1998. And it identified six components of community autonomy that were protective against suicide. And they were self-government, land claims, education, health services, cultural facilities, police, and fire. And they were saying that in Aboriginal communities across the country, where these six indicators were established, the suicide rate was 0.0 per 100,000. In communities where these six factors were not in place, the suicide rate was 137.5 per 100,000. The next slide said that in 1998, Chandler and Alon added a seventh indicator, and this seventh indicator was language use. And they said that language use, and that's the Aboriginal language, was a stronger protective factor than the original six components. In communities where at least half of the residents reported they had conversational knowledge of their native language, the suicide rates were 0.0 per 100,000. So they were emphasizing that language use acted as an indicator of cultural persistence and resilience, and also was a good indicator of mental health wellness in combination with these six other factors. So not only will TV Nunavut be a way to preserve the language and the culture, be an avenue for content producers to distribute their programming, but will very much affect and help when it comes to the area of mental health and just wellness. And this really stood out to me when I saw this, because it's been a long time for the volunteers, supporters such as IBC, Pixiv Media, Inuktitut Studios, content providers across the territory, the Arviat Film Society, the Inuit orgs have been behind us from day one, but it's been a long road. And it seems as soon as we reach one milestone, there's another little obstacle. So you're overcoming that, and then you get ahead, and then there's another obstacle. But I will say that much appreciation for the government departments and for the volunteers and the many production companies and producers, and IBC certainly has been a strong backer of TV Nunavut. They've been there supporting the organization when the organization needed to have some infrastructure and framework. And it can be discouraging at times, because sometimes it's a long time between your milestones. But when you see something like this, you know that you're on the right path. Thank you.
Oh, I forgot to add something in my presentation. So I was talking about our modules for Brandy from the radio station. It's mainly because we use three languages at the radio. So I'm Francophone, so mainly I do production in French. But we, because of our license, we have to produce minimum 7 hours of Inuktitut shows. So that's That's pretty awesome. But again, I have to find volunteers and people I'm getting, you know, in my team to build up something. So it's a maximum 7 hours per week of English and minimum 7 hours of Inuktitut shows.
I just wanted to make a comment on radio. I spoke mostly about television, but having lived in small communities and being Inuk, I witnessed regarding radios, and I want to echo a lot of what Fanny said, and she said it very well. In the communities, you have to also recognize with radio, there's a lot of Inuit in communities that can't afford regular landlines. They don't have telephones, and for sure they can't afford internet. As you've seen, the internet here is incredibly slow. In the communities, it's 10 times worse. And 10 times more expensive. It's super costly, especially because of the speed or lack of it. So in the communities, in real Inuit communities, you'll see the lifeline of the community is a functioning radio station. That radio not only provides entertainment and songs and, you know, traditionally what you'd see on conventional commercial radio stations down south. In the communities, these radio stations function as they help boost local economy. Like, people sell all sorts of things on local radio, country food, handicrafts. The local radio is key in search and rescue when people are trying to organize themselves for safety issues, community safety, community economy, also health. Like, you'll see a lot of people trying to communicate with so-and-so has an appointment today at the health center. They can't reach them because they don't have a telephone, so they do it through local radio. Local radio really is the lifeblood of northern communities for a multitude of reasons. So I just really wanted to echo what Fanny said. Unfortunately, a lot of communities struggle not just with the volunteers running a radio station, content, all of that stuff, which could be pretty time-consuming, and labor-intensive. It's also the societies themselves need. They're not organized. What do you call that? When you're registered, they're legal registered themselves as a society. Their incorporation aspects maybe not up to date because of lack of paperwork and a lot of paperwork, which is a huge issue, which is key for policymakers and government to understand. A lot of support is needed for these societies to function as a society, and then once they can function as a radio society, they can help them keep the radio going. There's a lot of communities that don't have functioning radios because their societies aren't organized as a society, and they've got legal and whatever aspects that are outdated. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Yeah. I'll add something to Madeline's speech. It's totally true, I'll just speak freely in my mind about that, but I find it bothers me a lot when I have to do some online applications for funding, either GN or Feds or for Canadian Heritage. It bothers me so much when I'm struggling so much, you know, to produce the format of the application, to see how the questions are formulated and the ways that you have to answer and how you get in touch with the program agent on phone. And it's very difficult, and it's totally a southern structure. So we need some kind of empowerment for the hamlets so that they can learn, in one hand, how to apply online, how to take care of these papers for the bureaucrats, let's say like that. And they have to learn, you know, on one hand, how to manipulate all these papers. So everything has to be formulated by words and know how to apply, go on the website, go to that link, call the agent, how you ask your questions, how to, you know, to take the detours and know how should you answer and how should you write your ideas. And that's something very difficult, because in the hamlets they don't know how to do that. And we on the second hand, I think that, you know, we have to adapt the programs for them. We can't ask them, okay, you just fill up like a 12-page of application and submit it online and we'll just take over, we'll just take a look over it and we just say if we grant the funding or not. It's totally a Southern structure. So yeah, I think that the Hamlets have to take a kind of empowerment to know that we should have a compromise. So we should impose a compromise so that they could have adapted needs and apply in their own ways and not being bound by these kind of very complex political structures imposed by governments.
Any questions? Sure, Sean.
I guess it's a comment more than a question, and maybe this shouldn't be on the record, but I think one thing to keep in mind when it comes to policies and regulations, like, I think it's okay to bend them as far as they can go. Like, we don't have, I think it's important to not just obey every single policy line. That's there to be interpreted, and it's there to be bent, and I think the one advantage we focused on a lot of disadvantages of being in a more remote part of the country, but the one advantage is that you can push the envelope on things, and I think that's okay. And I think as long as you have a decent group or a committee or a council, whatever you want to call it, to make sure that the content is culturally relevant and culturally respectable, I think you should. We should be doing what we want to do. And if we have to ask for forgiveness later, we can do that. But I think asking permission sometimes is the worst thing you can do, especially to your point, Fanny, about a lot of this is coming from boardrooms in Ottawa and different parts, and it always will. And I don't think that's going to change. But I think it's up to us to be a little more brave in pushing the envelope and not just taking an answer and as law. Policy isn't, I don't think we should be treating policy as a Bible. I think it's a framework that needs to be tested on any given day, depending on the needs of the community. So that's certainly something we want to do at the college. And we certainly want to not work alone on that, as you and I spoke about earlier. We want to be providing content. As I mentioned earlier, and I apologize for repeating myself, I'm a one-person office. I don't have the time to be doing CRTC. Like I just don't have time for that. What I do have time for and lots of energy for is to produce really cool content with not just the college, but partners in, you name it, all across the territory. So from our point of view, we want to push the envelope as far as we can go, and we're happy to ask for forgiveness if we do something wrong.
Could I say something?
Sure. When CBC decided that they would help out opening community radios, the community with satellite Kisunikwa towers and stuff, there was no real guideline given to them. It's not up to CBC to do that. It's up to CRTC to do that. So when these local communities radios came on, they knew how to talk. They knew how to answer the phone and put somebody on radio if they need to. But the thing is, they cannot program what they want to program because there's nothing for them. They don't have recording systems. They don't have on-air recorded items to be put on. They haven't even gone beyond just talking and playing music. So these communities are really deprived of what they can do further because they don't have the money for sure, the equipment they would probably want, or maybe they don't even know how far they can go with their community radio programming, or and has not really given the option to do so. So all they're doing is talking and playing music, and not just talking, but this stuff is really important to the community. Like Jack Adewak said this morning, it's vital on a daily basis. And as CBC, let them do that. And if they have a certain time to do it during the day, because we as CBC need to be on air too, because they take our transmitter and they start broadcasting in their community, and they lose CBC, and then they go on. But we let them, let's say, in search and rescue efforts. They'd be on all day long, and they were not here at CBC Radio. Some say, you know, we want to hear CBC, but you can't because we're doing search and rescue. Some will complain, but that's okay. People will understand this is an important job we're doing right now. So we're just going to be on radio all day with the search and rescue effort that's being done in their community. So it's very general, local community thing. It hasn't advanced since the 70s and CBC gave them this option. And it's been like that for forever. And the other thing is these people are just doing it on their own. They're not training. They're just pressing the button and talking. It's a volunteer effort. Nobody's getting paid. It's all volunteer. They are on at noon at 5 and at night around 8. So they are on 3 or 4 times a day. It all depends on each community how much they are needed. But they're quite vital. They haven't changed that since the 70s. They really don't have no guidelines and any effort to further in terms of production, where there is none at this point. Not that I know of. Some community, local community radios have better society, organized society, where they'll do certain phone-in shows. They'll do certain guest speaker to talk about, let's say, Baffinland. Like Iglunik has more organized and Pondinlat has more organized, but others who haven't really seen the idea of further production don't really do too much except serving the community as to what's going on that day. So it's really been the same since the 70s.
So in terms of policy, maybe you can answer this. How would you word this? How would you put it in terms of language, something I'm hearing, in terms of training? How would this operate in terms of policy in your minds?
Okay, so for the Broadcasting Act, which will hopefully be updated, at some point. Like, there's a section under the Broadcasting Act, section 3.1 D3, and it says here, through its programming and the employment opportunities arising out of its operations, serve the needs and interests and reflect the circumstances and aspirations of Canadian men, women, and children, including equal rights, the linguistic duality and multicultural, multiracial nature of Canadian society, and the special place of Aboriginal peoples within the society. And this is one of IBC's biggest beefs. Aboriginal people seem to always be lumped with multicultural. So our recommendation would that be Aboriginal people have its own section under the Broadcasting Act and not be lumped in with multicultural and multiracial, which is, we don't have a problem with sharing cultures, but we want to stand on our own. We're distinct First Peoples. So that would be a recommendation. And also under section 3.1.0, it says here, programming that reflects the Aboriginal cultures of Canada should be provided within the Canadian broadcasting system as resources become available for that purpose, right? So we say we want the wording to be must be available, not should it be available, but must. There should be a must. It should be changed from must. And then the federal government should, you know, put their money where the mouth is when it comes to this act. So those are two small suggestions we have regarding the Broadcasting Act. And I'm not sure what other policies, NAB?
The Native Broadcasting.
NAB, okay, I have some stuff on NAB too. Like I said earlier, like NAB has not allowed for much in the way of technological upgrades, and like Salome was saying, in the communities, everything's outdated. And then even here, like we have a new, beautiful, brand new building, which we worked really hard for, a media center, our new media center for IBC. It took us 8 years to do that. And on top of building this building, we had to keep up to date with our moving to HD. We were forced to move to HD, which was extremely expensive. And NAB does not provide for any of that kind of funding. We had to fundraise like crazy so that we could build our building to house our staff and house our very valuable 30 years of archives of footage, the development of Nunavut, the history of our people. So on top of doing this building, we were forced to move to HD, our cameras, and that was extremely expensive. And then the training that has to come with the new technology. So under NAB, that's something that's very limiting. And I think the timing couldn't be better now. I'm very excited about the Liberal government. I'm excited about the proposed new Indigenous Language Act, which I think should be married to the changes to the Broadcasting Act. They should go hand in hand, and same with NAB. They should all complement each other. I'm hoping they'll do it that way. That will be really powerful for us as a country, I think.
I totally agree with her statement, and I'm wondering, because I didn't read the whole policy, so I'm not sure if there's a specific section on ads, but if I can add something with the promise of performance, I'd like to have a special or specific grant for community radio so they can do ads in multiple languages, not just only, you know, and of course, like one of our mandate, you know, from CFRT 107.3 is not only to put a face on Francophones, but also gather all together, to meet Francophones with local communities. So for it to attend this goal, I'd like to have a kind of a more flexible license that it's adapted to you know, specific radio stations or in remote areas. So maybe that will be something that could play a complementary role with Broadcasting Act.
Thank you. Anything else you want to add at the moment? So I'll thank you for that. We'll just take a short break. And when we come back, I'd just like us to, it'll be very informal.